On Thursday, President Trump was asked about the war in Gaza, and Trump made some pretty strong comments about Israel. Some people feel he went too far. Trump essentially said that Israel needs to end the war as quickly as possible and that it is dragging out too long. Trump did not call for a ceasefire, very clearly, but some people are still concerned. Did Trump go too far? I will tell you my thoughts coming up. We've got a lot of Israel news to get to. The inadvertent killing, of course, of a convoy of seven aid workers. And look, we keep seeing Israel do things that everybody does in any war. We keep seeing them do things that Biden is guilty of, Obama, other leaders. They all got to pass, okay? It's always collateral damage when anybody else does it, okay? Bashar al-Assad literally gasses 500,000 of his own people, and nobody says a word. Nobody's outraged. I mean, Syria, millions of refugees, but the Palestinians and the Israelis, Israel is a monster, okay? And they get decimated. The double standard is totally out of control. Plus, Israel, of course, assassinated two IRGC commanders in Syria. The Iranians are furious. This was a very big achievement by Israel. We will get to that coming up. Prosecutor Jack Smith is furious, the special counsel furious with Judge Eileen Cannon. And that shows you that Judge Eileen Cannon is doing a good job because she knows the charges against Trump are bogus. So we will get into all of that coming up. Yet another poll shows Trump dominating in six key swing states. This poll conducted by the Wall Street Journal. And Trump, at a rally this week, he referred to illegal aliens who are violent criminals as animals, okay? And I want to be very clear. Trump did not refer to every illegal as an animal. He specifically was referring to murderers and violent criminals. And yet when the media reported about Trump's comments, they neglected to mention that he was specifically referring to murderers and violent criminals and felons. They falsely claimed that the many mainstream media outlets said that Trump is referring to illegals as animals, and this is rhetoric we've seen from Trump before, totally misconstruing and lying about his words. That's coming up. Karl Rove, former advisor to George W. Bush, says it would be a mistake for Trump to pardon the January 6th protesters. Karl Rove is one of those Republicans who views MAGA as a disease, okay? So we will bring you all the details coming up. A caller left me a voicemail telling me that, you know, I may be right about what my theory about RFK voters. This is actually a yeshiva bacha. This is a young man, maybe it sounds like he's in high school, and I believe he was referring to one of his English teachers. So a boy learning in, I believe, high school said that one of his secular studies teachers said that he's voting for RFK. So this boy, who's obviously a listener of the show, this young man, sounds like a very nice, sharp young man, he approached the teacher and he said, "Why would you vote for RFK? You know RFK has no chance of winning, right? Of course. So what's the point of voting for RFK? Because that's just a wasted vote. Like, what's the point? It's essentially voting for Trump because you obviously don't want Trump or you wouldn't vote for RFK." And the teacher said back, he said, "Listen, I don't want Biden to win, but I cannot bring..." He said exactly what we've been saying. He said, "I don't want Biden to win, but because I know that's bad for the country, but I can't bring myself to vote for Trump." It's totally irrational. It's Trump derangement syndrome, essentially, I call it. But in other words, it's emotional. I cannot bring myself to pull the lever. You know what I have? This is me, myself talking. I cannot register Democrat. I've had so many people have said to me that I should register Democrat because I live in a state where... and in a district where it really, the Democrat virtually always wins on the ticket. So whoever you vote for in the Democrat primary, that is who's what matters, because essentially my vote's meaningless because in the actual general election, like it generally it's always the Democrat that wins. So your only real choice, the only time your vote really matters is in the primary. And I vote in the Republican primary because I could not bring myself. I just could not bring myself. I tried. I tried to register Democrat. My family members are registered Democrat. It's not because they aligned with the views of the party, but because they're practical and they know that, like, my vote, for example, as a Republican, registered Republican, is a meaningless vote, but I just don't care. I just can't do it. But anyway, so this young man left me this voicemail saying, "You see that? This is our theory is proven correct, at least in the case of this teacher who says, yeah, I'm voting for RFK. I know it's a de facto vote for Trump, but I just can't bring myself to vote for Trump outright." You can't make this stuff up. All right, California has raised the minimum wage for fast food workers to $20 an hour. And this is creating mayhem for businesses. And who is this hurting? This is not hurting the businesses. It's hurting the little guy. They always turn the cost over to the consumer, to the middle class, the struggling or the low-income person who's going to end up paying more for the product. So California, they raised the minimum wage for fast food workers. That means fast food restaurants now have $20 an hour, $20 an hour for a fast food worker, somebody flipping burgers, somebody working at a cash register, okay, which they could basically train a monkey to do or get a machine or a robot, which is going to happen. They're going to have machines. Or maybe a really good monkey trainer, but they will have machines doing this because it's going to end up being much more efficient, much more cost effective than, you know, some of these restaurants, they have like a whole automated system that's still rare and cutting edge, but it's happening more and more because who wants to pay somebody $20 an hour to do monkey labor, which you need zero, not only do you not need a degree, you don't need any kind of training, any kind of skill, any kind of IQ, but California wants to force businesses to lose the money to pay the $20 an hour. So it's creating mayhem. Fast food restaurants have already hiked up prices on menu items, sometimes as high as 50%, but they are hiking up the prices like crazy. And who's getting hurt? The minorities. Who gets hurt the most when the fast food restaurants raise their prices significantly to keep up with this insane $20 an hour minimum wage? Minorities, okay? Minorities predominantly eat at fast food restaurants more than any other group. And you're going to say, well, but at least the employees, a lot of minorities are employed by these fast food restaurants, so at least they're making the money. No, because a lot of them are slashing jobs. My wife told me one of these companies, I think, I'm not sure which one of these fast food restaurants, these chains, big chain in California already slashed 1,200 jobs, and that's going to keep happening because they cannot afford it. So they're going to end up hiring fewer employees because they have to pay each one so much money, and they're just going to have to work with fewer employees. So you're not even helping the employees and the minorities because they're not, because they're going to be unemployed, a lot of them. So they claim to be helping minorities, Governor Gavin Newsom of California, and these Democrats, these woke leftists, and they're not. It's a sham. It's a farce, but the most insane part is that there's one loophole. There's one loophole to this rule, to this law, this new minimum wage in California. All fast food restaurants are included except for restaurants that bake and sell their own bread as a standalone menu item. Now, and that did, you'll say, well, okay, well, any loophole, that loophole, any restaurant could basically, any fast food joint can basically then decide to sell their own bread, bake and serve and sell their own bread, and as a standalone menu item, and they're good. Now they're exempt from the $20 minimum wage. No, because they have it has to be grandfathered in. They have to have done that before the law was passed. That applies to precisely one business. There is one fast food chain in the entire state of California who actually this loophole applies to, this exemption where they don't have the $20 fast food, $20 an hour minimum wage because they're exempt, because they bake and serve their own bread. That is Panera Bread. Now, why would you would wonder why such a bizarre, random loophole, exception to the rule that if you bake and sell your own bread as a standalone menu item, and you did so before the law, because now every restaurant would go and start doing it now. Not going to work. The answer is, well, one of Governor Gavin Newsom's biggest donors is a man named Greg Flynn, and he owns Panera Bread franchises in California. So he was the one person who's exempt now from this rule, because Panera Bread is exempt because of this bizarre random, just what luck. He's like Nancy Pelosi investing in the stock market. What luck does Greg Flynn has that Governor Gavin Newsom happened to make the loophole only apply to his restaurant, but no other restaurant. You cannot make this stuff up. Anthony Blinken, speaking of you cannot make it up, the Secretary of State, he spent 4 hours on a bus being bussed around Europe. He spent 4 hours. They were driving him across Europe on a bus. Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State, because his government plane experienced mechanical issues. This happened, I guess, this week or last week. You'll never guess what type of airplane Anthony Blinken was using that had mechanical issues. Yeah, you guessed it. It was a Boeing, and not just any Boeing, a Boeing 737. I mean, this is insane. I didn't hear a lot of coverage about this in the mainstream media, but this is a fact. They put the Secretary of State of the United States. He's like number three in line. I mean, I believe it's something like President, Vice President, Speaker of the House. And then, if I'm not mistaken, like the Secretary of State is number 4 or 5 or something like that, in line for the presidency. And they stuck him on a bus because he had the bad fortune of being in a Boeing 737, and they had mechanical failure. So they drove him like halfway across the European continent because he had to get to a meeting in Brussels with a bunch of European leaders. Blinken arrived in Brussels at NATO headquarters about 2 hours late for this event that was marking the 75th anniversary of the founding of the NATO alliance. Because his Boeing 737 experienced mechanical issues in January, Blinken was briefly stranded in Davos, you may remember this, at the World Economic Forum, after his plane, I guess the same model, suffered a critical failure of its oxygen system. And do you know Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has launched an investigation into a supplier of Boeing because of their DEI policies, their diversity policies? There's a concern that Boeing and their suppliers, their commitment to diversity, has been interfering with the quality and safety of its product. We've been telling you about that for many, many weeks. And now AG of Texas, Governor, the AG of Texas, Attorney General Paxton, Ken Paxton, is investigating if Boeing's DEI policies are messing around with the safety. And gee, you know, I'm just telling you the facts. You can connect the dots, put the pieces together yourself. Meanwhile, an Alaska Airlines flight from Hawaii to Alaska was forced to turn around, go back to Hawaii after a bathroom malfunctioned on that flight, on that plane. It flooded the aisles. Now, again, you'll never guess. Get ready. Sit down. Sit tight here. You're going to be shocked. It was a Boeing 737 MAX jet. And what happened was the bathroom malfunctioned and caused the aisles on the plane to become flooded with water. I mean, it's unreal. Another Boeing 737. So there's footage of this incident that was posted on YouTube. Flight attendants can be seen trying to soak up as much water. I mean, this thing flooded the floors, flooded the aisles as much as possible using paper towels and blankets. One passenger on the flight said there was probably 2 to 4 inches of standing water that swooshed out as soon as you opened the front door of the lavatory. They're saying it was either the bathroom sink or some other issue with the plumbing system on this flight. Alaska Airlines, of course, made headlines earlier this year when, after the door plug blew out, also a Boeing 737 MAX, the same model that had the flooding, a MAX 9, and the DOJ has opened an investigation into Boeing after that door flew off mid-flight. All right, let's talk about Israel. Israel getting hammered from all sides. And look, we'll get to the Trump comments shortly. But at this point, because, you know, these aid workers that were killed, which Biden did the same thing as we're about to get to, Obama did it. I mean, all these presidents, and look, I'm not condoning it. It's a tragedy. It's very, very sad. It's heartbreaking. Person never, ever wants civilian lives to be endangered in any way. But unfortunately, that's collateral damage of war. I don't mean to minimize it in any way, but everyone understands that, except when it's Israel. So at this point, the tiniest mistake by Israel is going to be endlessly, and it's going to happen, because they cannot be perfect. Nobody can have a perfect record. Israel's better than any of the others. It's going to be endlessly scrutinized because Israel has zero friends. So Israel mistakenly killed these 7 aid workers. Tragic mistake. By the way, it was pitch black. There was this convoy, okay, of vehicles. They were not marked, or there was no way Israel, the IDF, could discern any kind of marking on the vehicle. They got bad intel that the convoy was the enemy. It was pitch black. There was confusion. They said there was a lot going on. So remember, okay, paint the picture here of the scene. The IDF, they are literally sitting there in Gaza, surrounded by the enemy, being ambushed every which way, risking their lives every second. Rahman al-Islan, there are soldiers that are literally not surviving every single night. I mean, it's really, really horrific, okay? We cannot imagine the unthinkable conditions. But that's not even the point. The point is that Israel can do no right. Israel is acting in self-defense. Every single move Israel makes in this war is self-defense. Israel is the victim. I don't care that right now they happen to be on offense. They are the victim, okay? If you want to be angry about civilian deaths, that's fine. Be angry about civilian deaths. But who do you blame? You should blame Hamas, and only Hamas. Israel is the only victim here. And yet, by the way, Israel has always been the victim before Shemini Atzeres, before the Hamas terror attack. Anytime Israel would have any kind of conflict, that's why I always hated when they called it the conflict in Gaza or the conflict that Israel was having in Jenin. It was never a conflict. It was always they attack their terrorists and Israel is acting in self-defense. But after Shemini Atzeres, after the attack, there's no question anymore. It's not even an issue. It's not even like there's nothing to discuss that Hamas is the aggressor. Israel's acting in self-defense. Israel's the victim, period. Black and white. This, you know, I'll hear people say, these mainstream media analysts say, well, it's complicated. Well, it's nuanced. It's not complicated. It's not nuanced. It's insanely simple. And I know there was this clip. We're not going to be able to play it now. I know there was this clip of Dr. Phil, and it was a great clip of Dr. Phil. you know, spelling out. He was talking to like these Hamas defenders, these Hamas sympathizers, and they're saying, "Well, there's both sides." Civilians. He's like, "No." He's like, "The Israelis were attacked viciously. They came in. They literally killed babies in front of their parents. Rahman al-Islam. They did these horrific atrocities. It's black and white. It's clear, crystal clear. There's no nuance. There's no complications. None of that. Yet almost the entire world is demonizing Israel. It's a disgrace. It's irrational, but it is more clear than ever that they hate Israel. Israel can do no right. And that is what Hamas was banking on from day one. They committed these atrocities. They're treated as heroes. And Hamas knew that was going to happen. Israel is acting self-defense. Israel is treated worse than these brutal murderers who literally, Rahman al-Islam, torched babies in front of their parents and are still holding these 134 people hostage, including little children, including the little Bibas baby. And it's heartbreaking. It is hard. It's like ripping a hole in one's heart to start thinking about the Bibas family and, you know, Rahman al-Islam and all these other hostages who are still sitting there so many months later. So now you have Biden threatening to withhold weapons if there's no ceasefire, and Israel at this point has to ignore Biden, shut him out, call his bluff, completely ignore world opinion, act unilaterally, shut out all these vicious anti-Semites. I'm including Jamal Bauman, I'm including Chuck Schumer, and including Joe Rogan and Biden, and just shut them out, finish the job, period, because you're never going to please them. You are never going to please them. They hate Israel, okay? They hate Jews. They hate everything that we stand for. It's the only explanation. Any rational thinking human being looks at this situation and it is 100% clear that Israel is the victim, acting in self-defense, has the right to do whatever it takes. Now, another point I want to make is that, and this, you know, touches on Hashkafa a little bit. We cannot rely on anybody. We have no friends. And you're going to say to me, but what about John Fetterman? But what about Richie Torres? Like, you know, what about Trump? What about Dr. Phil, like I just mentioned? What about Alan Dershowitz? We have to recognize something here as Yidden, because I keep seeing people fall into this trap. We're so desperate to have somebody on our side. And when that person's on, and I'm fine with somebody being on our side. But and we have to not only be fine, but we have to show them hakara hatov and appreciation and support, because we need it. We need all the help we can get. However, we cannot rely on humans, okay? Al tiftachu ben adivim, right? Beven adam she'en la Yeshua. That's exactly what it's talking about. Yeshua comes from one place, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you see a human being like John Fetterman, who does have his head screwed on straight, who does have some clarity, or some others, or Richie Torres, who's been, he's been amazingly supportive, or like I said, Dr. Phil, for example, it's a shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Baruch Hashem. We do have a few people out there who are sane, but stop focusing on the human, on the person, because there are no people that we can ever rely on, even the good ones. It's just, you cannot rely. That's a distraction. That is something that, we, you know, that's a delusion, because we're so desperate to have somebody. Stop being desperate for somebody and recognize that we only have one HaKadosh Baruch Hu to save us, nobody else, and even Dershowitz. As Yidden, even the people who seem like our friends are basically worthless, not because they're bad people. I want to be clear. There are Hasidei Yom HaZoilim out there, but because the message here has been from day one of this attack is only from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We only rely on Hashem. And, you know, I did see, happen to know, to see something from Rav Tzadik a couple of days ago in the Sefer Tzidkas HaTzadik, where he says, "Bechol derachecha de'ehu." He essentially says, "Bechol derachecha de'ehu." And every one of your drachim, every path you go on, recognize de'ehu. He says, recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, you have to see Hashem. Every move you make, you do well in business, you do well, you have some kind of achievement, an achievement in yeshiva, whatever it happens to be. It's something good, something bad, something neutral, good things happen, you make a decision, it goes well, it doesn't go well, sometimes things go badly, you feel like it's bad luck. It's all the de'ehu, every derech, it's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every single move, we are pawns on the chessboard. And it's always, always, always being governed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes we see it very clearly, sometimes we don't, but it's always, always from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to have that constant clarity. So we get excited when somebody supports us, like a Fetterman and like a Dr. Phil, because like we're so desperate because so many people are throwing us under the bus. But that really, deep down, is a lack of bitachon. And there's a keichem v'yotzim yadi that I'm seeing also, where I'm seeing people say, "Oh, the Israelis, we can do this ourselves. We don't need other people. We have an incredible military. Yes, we faltered. Yes, there were mistakes made, but not anymore. We don't need..." No. We need HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, we can handle this. We can go it alone. We're never alone. So I'm not liking, and again, I'm not saying that that's the mantra that I'm hearing everywhere. I want to be clear, but I'm hearing it here and there, and we got to be so careful because we're so afraid to be alone. we are alone. We're never alone. Chas v'sholom, because we have a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But we have to recognize, you know, our natural instinct to feel this relief and euphoria when John Fetterman defends us. In a way, it's a chisaron, it's a mirage, because yes, we need to show a Kadosh HaTov, and Hashem sends shluchim, and we appreciate a voice, our support. But we only have one protector. John Fetterman ain't protecting us. Okay, Netanyahu is not protecting us. Period. Now let's get into the utter hypocrisy of President Biden, because Biden is slamming Israel, okay? Because Israel killed aid workers inadvertently. Well, Joe Biden killed an aid worker, remember? But only they did it intentionally in Afghanistan, along with a bunch of children. They knew that it was very likely that this was not a terrorist. Remember, with the botched Afghanistan pullout, we've told you about this a million times, where they needed a scapegoat. There was that horrific, horrific bombing at the airport and killed, I believe, 13 U.S. military personnel. It was horrific. It was tragic. It was unspeakable. And then Biden needed to respond because he was under so much pressure because of that terror attack and the whole botched pullout and people hanging off of, dangling off of airplanes as they were taking off out of Kabul. The whole situation was surreal. So Biden needed, it was like, get us somebody. We need to retaliate against somebody. So they found a man. The man was like loading his trunk up with a bunch of, water tanks. Somehow they decided he was a terrorist. It turns out he was an aid worker. And then there were a bunch of kids around. They didn't care. They targeted him. They had no clue who he was. They didn't care. They needed a scapegoat. They killed the aid worker. They killed a bunch of kids. That is much more egregious, because that was pure negligence. I'm being too kind if I call it negligence. It was worse than negligence. They literally targeted an innocent man and killed him because they needed a scapegoat, period. They knew that he was likely innocent. And then there were a bunch of kids around. You tell me they can't tell that there are kids around? And then they did a whole investigation and said, well, nobody's going to be held accountable, of course. So that's disgraceful that Biden is now going and Israel inadvertently, kills these aid workers in this convoy. And Biden somehow is criticizing them. What Biden did is a million times worse. A caller reminded me that the United States killed a bunch of civilians with airdrops in Gaza. Remember, they airdropped this aid. They're claiming, they parachute down these boxes of supplies of aid, and it's an airdrop, and a bunch of them, five people were killed, and then 13, 14 were injured because it fell without a parachute. The parachute never opened. The United States, of course, claimed that it wasn't one of theirs. It really doesn't even matter, because once they do airdrops, they know that this risk exists. So it was the United States, it was NATO countries, whatever it was, they knew that it was a risk. But how do we know? Of course, the United States is going to deny that it was them. They know. They went down there, and they checked which humanitarian aid packages there were. I don't believe that for a split second. But what's the difference? Okay, airdrops in Gaza, great point by the caller. And that's exactly the same thing that happened with Israel. And of course, nobody said a word because it wasn't the Israelis. Jared Moskowitz, he's a Democrat congressman from Florida. He was on CNN and he admitted that tragedies happen like this and that the United States did similar things to what Israel did with these aid workers in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he said, by the way, this would never have happened if Hamas would accept a ceasefire. So he made it very, very clear that, number one, this has been done by the United States in Iraq and in Afghanistan. Many people have pointed that out. And number two, this is Hamas's fault. Meanwhile, Biden had a call with Bibi on Thursday. Then the White House released either a transcript of the call, or I don't think they released a transcript, but they did release like a summary of the call. And let me read you some excerpts here. Quote, President Biden spoke by telephone with Prime Minister Netanyahu. He made clear the need for Israel to announce and implement a series of specific concrete measurable steps to address civilian harm, humanitarian suffering, and the safety of aid workers. He made clear U.S. policy will be determined by our assessment of Israel's immediate action on these steps. He underscored that an immediate ceasefire is essential to stabilize and improve the humanitarian situation and protect innocent civilians. So essentially, Biden is once again threatening Israel. I mean, it's so disgraceful how Biden is treating Israel. And the same caller who I quoted earlier talking about the aid packages being dropped, he called me, left me a voicemail. I'm pretty close to them. He leaves me a lot of voicemails. We're in touch sometimes. And he said, I was right from day one. He says, remember Biden in the beginning? Biden, people said he's such a hero. He's such a friend of Israel. He flew to Israel. He's saying all the right things. And from day one, this caller was saying, it's a sham. It's an act. It is fake. All Biden, he's trying to gain leverage. He wants to have a seat at the table. He wants Israel. He wants to have some influence with Israel. And this person nailed it spot on, because Biden has shown his true colors here in recent months. I mean, he is the worst enemy of Israel that anybody could have ever imagined. It's a disgrace. And look what he's saying. He's saying an immediate ceasefire. How could they do an immediate ceasefire? And now he's threatening to withhold weapons. And again, Israel has to call his bluff here. I believe he's bluffing, but you never know. Who knows with what's going on with these Democrats? All right, so I got to get to now the clip of President Trump. President Trump was interviewed by conservative talk show host, pretty conservative. I wouldn't call him really conservative. I think he was also, you know, part of the Bush administration, like Karl Rove. But either way, he's kind of like a real establishment Republican, but he's somewhat conservative, and he interviewed Trump. And I guess I'm going to play the clip. It's a little bit long here, but I think it's very important. He asked Trump about Israel, and listen to this clip.
It is what it is, and this horrible thing happened. And what I said very plainly is, get it over with, and let's get back to peace and stop killing people. And that's a very simple statement. Get it over with. They got to finish what they finish. They just have to get it done. Get it over with, and get it over with fast, because you have to get back to normalcy and peace. The whole world is blowing up with this idiot president we have. He's an idiot. He's the dumbest president we've ever had. He's the most corrupt, and he's the most incompetent, and he's the worst president we've ever had by a fact. You know, I say, and you've listened to plenty of them, if you add up the 10 worst presidents in history, they haven't done the damage that this guy's done to our country. What he's done at the border with allowing probably 15 million people by this time into our country, and plenty more coming, it's just insane. What they have done to our country in 3.5 years is unbelievable.
But you are still standing 100% with Israel. You achieved the Abraham Accords, which was the first peace deal since Sadat. And so are you still 100% with Israel? And what's your advice to Netanyahu beyond get it over with in a hurry?
Well, that's all the advice you can give. I mean, that's the advice. You got to get it over with, and you have to get back to normalcy. And I'm not sure that I'm loving the way they're doing it, because you got to have victory. You have to have a victory. And it's taking a long time. And the other thing is, I hate they put out tapes all the time. Every night they're releasing tapes of a building falling down. They shouldn't be releasing tapes like that. That's why they're losing the PR war. Israel is absolutely losing the PR war.
That's how I read your interview. I read your interview as saying they're losing the PR war. They've got to stop releasing bad video and win the war by going into Rafah.
They're releasing the most heinous, most horrible tapes of buildings falling down. And people are imagining there's a lot of people in those buildings or people in those buildings. And they don't like it. And I don't know why they release, you know, wartime shots like that. I guess it makes them look tough. But to me, it doesn't make them look tough. They're losing the PR war, and they're losing it big. But they've got to finish what they started, and they got.
Okay, so as far as the issue with the PR war and the clips of blowing up buildings and all the clips of the destruction, we'll get to that in a moment. I don't agree with Trump fully, but he has a point. We'll explain that in a moment. But as far as the overall point here, what did Trump say that was so bad? What line did Trump cross, or what did he say that came down hard? And whatever you're going to tell me, worst case scenario here, something that Trump said negative about Israel. Let's assume for a second, which I don't believe is really the case, but let's go there. It's not even a fraction. It's not even a tiny. You're talking about the whole history. You know, we'll do the litmus test of, well, what if Biden said it? What if Biden said Israel better get it done as quickly as possible? I don't like all the killing. Like I said a couple of days ago, I don't even care about words anymore. I only care about actions. Words to me are meaningless. But what did Trump say? Israel needs to get it done. Israel will be the first to say they want to get it done. And Trump, in the middle there, he goes off on a tirade about Biden, implying, clearly insinuating, yeah, because Biden's forcing Israel, handcuffing them, forcing them to slow everything down, not allowing the indiscriminate bombing, not allowing the bombing from the air and the airstrikes and all of that. Israel was able to carpet bomb until Biden came in and basically forced them not to. So the way I read Trump's comments there, worst case scenario, he's saying, listen, I wish Israel could do this without so much killing. Get it done. He's saying get it done. Biden's saying ceasefire. He's saying get it done. You know, Biden is saying don't go into Rafah, which we know what that means. That means hostages do not get released. And more importantly, perhaps, that means that Hamas is not dismantled. Hamas remains intact. And that means that Khalil, Chas v'Shalom, more terror attacks in the future. Rahman al-Islam, Leia Lenu. So what are you talking about? What did Trump say? What did Trump say? Israel has to get it done? Israel would be applauding him and saying, please, we have to get this done. So the only thing you're going to tell me, some kind of nuance that you pick apart his words, the only thing you could tell me, you know, the litmus test is, what if Biden said this? What if Biden said, listen, Israel has to get it done. I don't like all the kids. He said some words there in the middle saying, you know, I don't like all the. He said they have to finish up the war. They're losing a lot of support. He's right about that. And he says, and they have to get back to peace and stop killing people. And he said, like, the whole world is blowing up over this or something along those lines. Okay, what I'm reading that into, and it's not even like a difficult read or a twisting of the words. It's basically what Trump said is, listen, I get it. They need to be doing this. Of course, they have every right to be doing this. But I wish they would just get it over with quickly, almost to say, like, I wish the world would just stay out of it and let Israel to get over it quickly. But you're going to say Israel's doing, he didn't say he doesn't like their approach. In other words, he knows, Trump knows that there's a lot of people out there who think, oh, I wish we could minimize civilian casualties. They can't. In fact, Israel's doing so much more than anybody else did. But I understand Trump, you know, he is an American president. He's not, you know, literally a PR person for Israel. So I understand why he needs to temper his words by saying, listen, get it done fast. Let's try to avoid any more killing. Okay, but you don't like that. You don't like, the one thing I don't like, there's a nuance here where it's like, hello, Israel's doing, acting in self-defense. So how can you criticize anything they're doing? Forget the PR. How can you criticize anything? I don't like their approach. How dare anybody say, I don't like your approach? I mean, you look at what happened to them. If it happened to your parents, to your family, okay, to your kids, chas v'shalom. So that's the part here that, you know, I understand rubs people the wrong way, but it's way overblown. This is being way overblown. This is not a big deal at all. And it's no different. And they were referencing there when you had says, oh, I thought that's what you meant. That's how I read the interview. He was referring to a different interview where Trump said he didn't like Israel's PR and the pictures and the videos they're putting out. And people interpreted it to mean that Trump didn't like Israel bombing. And that wasn't what Trump meant. I didn't like the bomb. He has no problem with the bombing. He's fine with the bombing. Just don't put it out on video. Don't announce it. Now let's get to that. So I have no problem here. At first I was like, oh, you know what? Why did Trump say this? This is disturbing to me. Why does Trump have to go there? Why does he have to say that I wish Israel wouldn't do so much killing? But then when I thought about it, I understand what he's trying to say is, listen, I want Israel to have the freedom to do this. I wish it could be done in a way. Trump is just like wishing, like everybody's wishing, that there could be no collateral damage, no civilian casualties. But I didn't hear, you know, maybe a subtle critique of Israel. But then compare it to Biden, okay? Biden, who's been so vicious and so evil to Israel and just completely abandoned Israel and so disingenuous about it that he pretends and claims, oh, I like Israel. I'm friends with Israel. Israel, we're tight. You know, yeah, I don't like Netanyahu, but I love Israel. Well, 80% of Israel, of the Israelis, are in favor of what Netanyahu is doing right now. And, you know, they elected him. And, you know, he's their leader. He's democratically elected. He didn't, like, usurp power. So Biden is Israel's worst nightmare. Trump is Israel's best friend. You tell me you have a problem with a subtlety here that you wish Trump had phrased things differently in an interview. I know people who are Jews, who are Democrats. And they say, oh, look, you see? Trump threw Israel under the bus. Trump and Biden, same thing. That's literally what they're saying. Trump and Biden, same thing. That's insanity. That is ludicrous to listen to this interview and say Trump and Biden the same thing. That's as far as that. And as far as the PR stuff goes, listen, here's where Trump is wrong. Is Israel's bad PR comes because Israel has bad PR. They could literally put out, you know, pictures of a serene, sunset and could put out the most beautiful pictures of the horizon in Gaza. Everything's so peaceful and so nice. And they'd get terrible, terrible PR. Israel always gets terrible PR no matter what they do. And it's because the media despises Israel. The entire media, even a lot of the conservative media has not been, you know, very friendly toward Israel. So I don't agree with Trump about that Israel's causing their own PR problems. Now, you want to tell me, yeah, but they shouldn't put out the videos of the bombing. We could debate that. Maybe he has a point. But is that really the core of Israel's bad PR? No, 100% not. But look, I'm fine. That's not a knock on Israel's actual military approach and strategy. That's just, listen, Israel has a bad PR team. Yeah, listen, they've had PR issues in the past. I really, like I said, I don't think that's making or breaking anything. I think they'd have terrible PR no matter what, because that's how it always works. But you want to tell me they'd be better off without posting those videos? Okay, good point by Trump. That's why I say he's right and he's wrong, because I don't think that's Israel's core problem. But I do hear his point there. All right, look, now, but the bottom line is, you know, the wake-up call here is that, listen, we can't rely on even Trump. We can't rely on Trump. He's been a true friend of Israel. But you cannot rely on any human being, as I said earlier. All right, Israel killed two IRGC terrorist commanders. This is huge. This was a strike against the Iranian consulate in Syria and Damascus. Huge achievement. And now Israel's under threat of retaliation. It's pretty terrifying. And Israel, very interesting, Israel has jammed, according to a bunch of reports, Israel jammed GPS signals all throughout the region in order to interfere with GPS-guided weapons. Iran is threatening some sort of very, very significant retaliation. Iran is threatening some kind of very, very big, dangerous revenge, retribution, retaliation, some sort of strike or multiple strikes. And apparently a lot of their weapons are guided by GPS systems, and Israel has jammed the GPS, so that way the GPS-guided systems don't work. You literally have people who are driving around northern Israel, and the GPS is telling them that they're in Cairo, that they're in Egypt, or they're in Syria or Lebanon, because the GPS is all out of whack, and apparently that's so that the missile, if they tell a missile with GPS guidance or some other weapon or a drone, you know, to travel to a certain part of Israel, it's not going to find its way, and it's going to end up over a whole different country. So that's pretty fascinating. But what's amazing is Israel goes, and they of course have every right and doing the world a favor by eliminating these two leaders of the IRGC, which is a massive terror organization, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, and yet they're getting flack. They're getting flack by Americans, okay? Ralph Goff, former CIA official who operated in the Middle East, he said Israel's strike was reckless. He called it reckless. Reckless? You know, it's like what they did with Trump with Soleimani. I mean, literally, what could be better? What could be a bigger and more successful achievement than taking out these two terrorist leaders who are part of Iran's Revolutionary Guard? And he said it was reckless and will only result in escalation by Iran and its proxies. And he added, Israel's trying to hit the Revolutionary Guard to punish them for ongoing plots to kill or kidnap Israeli Jews around the world. So this Ralph Goff, in the same breath, he's saying, oh, by the way, Israel did this. It was reckless to assassinate these two commanders of the IRGC. And then he said, oh, Israel's doing it to punish Iran for ongoing plots to kill or kidnap Israeli Jews around the world. Well, that doesn't sound very reckless to me. Meanwhile, Dana Strowell, the Pentagon's former top Middle East policy official, warned that the strike was a significant escalation and risks tipping an already volatile, unstable region into full-scale wars. Don't you love that? Israel is risking significant escalation, again, by attacking Iran, who was behind the Hamas terror attack, and so many other, all the attacks, terror attacks against Israel, one way or another, are funded by Iran, and continue to be, and Israel somehow they're the ones who are risking turning an unstable region into a full-scale war. Unbelievable. All right, one other clip I want to play you here, totally separate topic. Karine Jean-Pierre was asked about the word bloodbath by Fox reporter, Fox News White House correspondent Peter Ducey, because Joe Biden himself has used the word bloodbath. So Peter Ducey essentially asked KJP, what's the difference between Trump using the word bloodbath and Biden using the word bloodbath? Listen to this clip.
Just a quick point of clarification, Karine. So when Donald Trump is talking about a bloodbath, it is violent rhetoric. What was it when Joe Biden said in 2020, what we can't let happen is let this primary become a negative bloodbath?
So I'm going to be really mindful and careful about Donald Trump, but if you read, because he is a candidate, we're talking about a 2024 election, you should read what he said in its context. So you got to read what he said in context.
I mean, you got unbelievable. I mean, she, you know, you hear her talk and it's like, okay, I mean, she is not going to be trying for any PhDs anytime soon, not taking any IQ tests anytime soon. But it's unbelievable. I mean, Peter Ducey's funny. Well, why is it that when Trump calls it a bloodbath, and by the way, when she says, I'm going to be careful talking about Trump, is she's referring to the Hatch Act, because technically she's a government, she's working in a capacity of a government official, not a Trump Biden campaign, because she's a spokesperson for barely, but she's officially the press secretary, although that's a generous term for KJP. I'm not sure if she could spell the words press secretary, but, you know, so she's not allowed to technically talk about a candidate in an upcoming election. But that's either here or there. The point is the technical thing. But, you know, Peter Ducey embarrassing Biden there and embarrassing the White House, because Trump used the word bloodbath and everybody has a meltdown, and Biden used the word bloodbath and lots of people use the word bloodbath. It's a very common term. And speaking of that, we have so much else to get to here, but you know, we told you about how Google Dictionary changed the definition of the word bloodbath after Trump got hammered for it and no longer used the definition, the figurative definition, the metaphoric definition. So a listener sent me an email. I mentioned this briefly last time. He sent me a long email with a lot of points, but I just want to mention this point. And he said, it goes much deeper. It's not just like somebody sitting there at Google headquarters saying, hey, let's go. And the listener makes a great point. And say, hey, let's go and change the definition and remove Trump's definition. it's an algorithm, right? Usually with Google, whether it's a dictionary or whether it's Google search engine or whatever, it's usually an algorithm, right? So now, obviously, they're woke leftists who are programming the algorithm. That's true. But what his point was, the listener's point is that the algorithm is detecting that Americans, this is the trend. The algorithm is going and scanning the media and scanning social media and everything else and noticing, all right, this is the trend. People used to think that bloodbath means this, but now after Trump says it and after Trump gets slammed repeatedly, which is, it's nonsense, it's absurd, but he did. So now suddenly Google changed the definition because now they see a trend in the people. So it's not just like somebody at Google who changed the definition. Google recognizes that millions and millions of people now don't like using the word bloodbath to mean what Trump meant when he talked about an auto industry bloodbath because they're trying to bash Trump, right? So now suddenly Google changed the definition because they're sensing that that's what the people want. The people don't like this definition anymore. Why? Because their political agenda, which is terrifying because it means like, you know, people, how they react to Trump is going to like change the meanings of words and culture and society and who knows what else. Now, I don't think that precludes the fact it's still being run. Now you say, but aren't there millions of Trump supporters like us who know that the word bloodbath can be a metaphor and can be symbolic, right? So not be literal. So the answer is still clearly the Google dictionary is being programmed to only notice the algorithms only noticing the leftist and not the right and not the right wing, not the conservatives, only the people on the left and the radical woke mob. I get that. That's true. I don't think the listener's saying otherwise, but the point is that it's an algorithm that goes much deeper than just Google's dictionary changing, but it's actually sensing that this is what the masses who cannot stand, who have Trump derangement syndrome, are driving at. All right, a caller asked me, there's a caller who calls me all the time, a young man, I believe he's learning in yeshiva, and very nice, you know, he's always very complimentary of the show, always makes a lot of good points. I try to listen to all of his voicemails, some of them are long, try to listen to them, but I recognize his voice at this point, he calls often, and he's very complimentary, praises the show, he seems to like the show, so I really appreciate that. He asked me for a shout-out, and I think he said his name is, and I'm not going to give him a shout-out, but I think he said his name is, although it's nothing personal, I think he said his name is Yisrael Chaim, he might have said Yitzchak Chaim, but I believe he said Yisrael Chaim from Lakewood, said it pretty quickly, so I didn't catch it for sure, but I believe his name is Yisrael Chaim. I played it back a couple of times from Lakewood. So unfortunately, I cannot give a shout out to Yisrael Chaim from Lakewood because it's not personal. He's always complimenting the show. He seems to enjoy it very much. He has some critiques. I like that. He has some disagreements. I love it. Keep it coming. Everybody, leave me a voicemail. Send me an email, josh@vinnews.com, josh@vinnews.com. But I just don't do shout-outs. That's just not me. I just don't like doing shout-outs. I don't know if I've ever done it in the past, maybe once or twice, but that I do not like doing that. So Yisrael Chaim from Lakewood, I apologize, but no shout-out for you. The RNC and the Trump campaign have had a surge in donations following the resignation of Rona McDaniel. What a shock. Special Counsel Jack Smith. All right, maybe we'll have to... we'll do this quickly over here. Special Counsel Jack Smith is livid, furious at Judge Eileen Cannon. So that tells me Eileen Cannon is doing something right. She is a Trump appointee, but all that means is she's fair. Oh, she's playing favorites to Trump. No. It just means she's in the middle. Okay, so what happened was Jack Smith in these court filings this week, he's furious with the judge because he says she ordered briefings that are based on a fundamentally flawed understanding of the case that have no basis in law or fact. Basically, Judge Cannon is showing that she likely believes that Trump had a right to take home documents that he considered personal documents, even if they're classified documents. And like every president has done, and even Joe Biden did when he was VP. And so Trump did what everybody does. But she actually, there's a source in the law that says that Trump can decide, all right, these documents are mine and I'm allowed to take them home. So that's why Jack Smith is so furious. So in what the mainstream media is calling this an unusual order, Judge Cannon ordered the attorneys, asked the attorneys to submit briefs on potential jury instructions to define the terms of the Espionage Act, which is what Trump is being accused of violating. Cannon asked the attorneys to write two versions of jury instructions. The first version, the first scenario, would instruct a jury to assess whether the records that Trump is accused of retaining fell into the category of personal or presidential, as laid out by the Presidential Records Act, because Trump's attorneys are saying, listen, you're allowed to take home personal papers, not presidential papers. And they're saying, well, all the stuff Trump took home was personal. And Judge Cannon is buying into that narrative, which sounds very legit, by the way, and probably what a lot of these presidents rely on, not that they really care, they just take it home and sneak it home and know they're never going to get indicted because their name's not Trump. But either way, you know, so that was one version. The second version Cannon asked for assumes that as president, Trump had total authority to take any records that he wanted. But either way, you know, so the second version is going very lenient on Trump. The first version is basically saying, listen, Trump had a right to determine, all right, these are mine, I get to take them because they're personal, not presidential. And so Jack Smith is furious because he realizes what's going on over here is Judge Cannon understands that this entire trial is bogus. So she's agreeing basically to what Trump's attorneys have been arguing. The trial hasn't started yet, but they're already getting set up. And by the way, this trial is likely not going to happen before November and before the election. So that is huge. So basically, Judge Cannon is setting up. She wants a jury that eventually gets put in place to understand that Trump was allowed to take home these documents. So the special counsel's team wrote in a filing, they're like, Belt's basically building a case against Judge Cannon. Quote, both scenarios rest on an unstated and fundamentally flawed legal premise, namely that the Presidential Records Act and its distinction between personal and presidential records determine whether a former president is authorized to possess highly classified documents under the Espionage Act and store them in an unsecure facility. And they said that that would distort the trial. So this is just beautiful. We'll keep an eye on that. The Reuters story, like I said, President Trump was in a Michigan campaign rally on Tuesday, and Reuters said that Trump called illegals animals, and that is false. That is fake news. He was speaking about Lake and Riley, and Trump said some. Listen to the Reuters quote here. While speaking of Lake and Riley, who was, of course, tragically gunned down in a horrific tragedy, unspeakable, by an illegal. Now I'm telling you that wasn't Reuters would never call that person illegal, even though Biden did. Trump said some immigrants are animals. The Democrats say, they're quoting Trump, the Democrats say, please don't call them animals, they're humans. I said, no, they're not humans, they're animals. So Reuters, you read this Reuters article and a bunch of other articles from the mainstream media, it makes it sound like Trump was calling illegals animals. He was not. He was calling the criminals animals. And they totally misconstrue it and skip that part and make it sound like he's calling illegals animals. It's just disgraceful. And they also say there's no evidence that illegals coming across the border are a higher percentage of criminals than anybody else in society. Number one, I don't believe that because look at all the drug cartels and everything else, people who are coming across the border, they're committing a crime just by crossing illegally. But number two, so what? I don't even want one illegal. You tell me, well, it's only 1 out of 1,000 who are illegals. Well, Biden's letting in millions. So I don't want 1 out of 1,000. I don't want 1 out of 10,000. It's bad enough we have criminals in America. Can't get rid of them. But these, why are you letting them in? Why are you letting in criminals? I don't care if it's one in a million. Karl Rove blasted the January 6th rioters, and he also said that Trump is making a big mistake by pardoning them. And basically, he was on MSNBC, Karl Rove, and basically he said that he gave the Biden campaign advice and a strategy, which is egregious. He said if they're smart, they should take January 6th and go hard at it and say he wants to pardon these people who attacked our Capitol. Karl Rove is giving, on MSNBC, giving the Biden campaign advice, saying, listen, Trump wants to pardon January 6th. You should use that. You should use that as ammunition. You should use that as leverage to try to beat Trump and to try to scare people into not voting for Trump. I mean, he's supposed to be a Republican, right? He has disdain for MAGA, a disdain for Trump, amazing that you would give Biden advice, even if you don't like Trump. Like, are you looking around? Do you see what's happening in this country right now? Karl Rove, really, his personal dislike for Trump and distaste is going to let him give advice to Biden on how to beat Trump? It's insane. Finally, new poll shows President Trump leading Biden in 6 of the 7 most competitive swing states in the election, okay? Wall Street Journal says that voter dissatisfaction with the national economy and doubts about Biden's capabilities and job performance are the main contributors of Trump winning in this poll, leading in this poll. I don't get it. Every economist knows that the economy is doing amazing. I mean, all the key indicators, CPI, unemployment, GDP, yeah, gas costs a fortune, $4 a gallon. Groceries cost a fortune, but the economy is thriving like never before. Why are people not seeing it? Well, just because people can't afford to buy groceries and fill up the gas tank, don't they know that the consumer price index and the GDP are way up? Unbelievable. Anyway, so according to the poll, Trump is leading between 2 and 8 percentage points in 6 states: Arizona, Michigan, Georgia, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina. Only in Wisconsin does Biden have a very, very slight lead. And that's if there's a third party candidate. But even if it's head to head, Trump still has a healthy lead. So look, there's a long way to go. But if 2 years ago I told you that, listen, Trump would get indicted 4 different times, 4 different indictments, 91 charges against Trump, and he would get thrown off the ballot in a bunch of states, then put back on by the Supreme Court, get accused of treason because he told Putin to invade NATO, and all of that and so much more, and all the mean, nasty tweets, and plus, not to mention the $460 million of bail that was demanded and the fraud trial and everything else. Trump would go through all of that. And yet in April of 2024, every poll, Trump has a healthy, solid lead against Biden. Okay, and none of these trials are going to be happening before November, except for the bogus Alvin Bragg trial, which might work toward Trump's advantage if he gets acquitted. So if I had told you that a couple of years ago, I mean, you would have been very, very pleasantly surprised and very pleased. So this is very exciting news. Let's not get too excited because, you know, you never know. But it's nice to end on a positive note. That's going to do it for today. And we will see you next time.